Hey, gang, Sam here. In this episode of GarageCast, we talked to Justin Pritaski from American Marine. He is the president of American Marine. He's one of our Marine 20 clubs as well. And Justin came from a corporate background, so some interesting comparisons and contrast to what's going on with mom and pop versus corporate entities that are out there. And we even get into some cold plunging near the end. So enjoy this podcast with Justin Pritaski. We're going to do our best to get new thinking out there.
There's going to be discussions centered around growth and new thinking.
That's where those great ideas come from, exploring them together.
Nuggets that you can go back and put into your dealership that'll help you make more money.
This is GarageCast.
Welcome to GarageCast. Dantzler got pretty significant amount of feedback on the two-part series on spring 2024.
Yeah, some of it was even good.
Yeah, well, that's funny because, you know, there's, it goes back to that whole thing that we started off the year with culture. There's just some dealers that they're, you know, everything is always the wrong side of the funnel. You know, the market, the weather, their lunch that they ate that day, you know, it's just like, it's going to be all bad. And then you just got dealers that are like, man, I'm ready. Let's do this. You know, spring has sprung and let's kick some ass.
I honestly think it's just a focus or lack thereof on the controllables versus the non-controllables, right? People who complaining and, you know, they're pointing to everything they can't do anything about. So I'm with you there.
So there I was, death scrolling on the interwebs and somehow
TikTok videos, I'm sure.
Yeah. Dance videos on TikTok. There I was. I was on Instagram and up pops this Instagram reel that just made me pee in my pants laughing. And
I think I know where you're going here.
Yeah. And it's a dude by the name of Justin Pritaski. We're gonna let him get into this, but he was in the hole, which is him cold plunging in I don't know if we call that a lake or a pond, but he was in a body of water. He was cold plunging and he was hammering the shit out of both you primarily and then me at the end, which I was crying. I was laughing so hard. So I was like, man, this character, we got to get this dude on the podcast. So, you know, with no further ado, I want to welcome Justin Pritaski to GarageCast. Justin, how are you?
Not doing too bad, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
All is well.
Great, man. Well, where are you coming to us from?
Beautiful La Crosse, Wisconsin. Nice sunny day out there. I can, if I look over my computer screen, I can see the river and it looks calm. Looks like it's boating weather out there.
Fantastic. And you are helming the organization that is American Marine. Got several rooftops. We're going to let you kind of explain where that whole thing is, but excited to jump into this and kind of get to know you and the operation. So, you know, you've been in the marine industry for a long time.
Whoa. We're not letting that intro slide. You can't launch that. He kicked the shit out of both of us and not unpack that a little bit, Tony.
Oh, we got plenty of time and hot mics to go. I mean, we'll get to that because I think somewhere around question six or seven is, or nine is the cold plunging whole philosophy. So we're going to get into it. And we will even tell people where to go to find this video so that you guys can laugh hard as well. But looking at your resume on LinkedIn and seeing where you've been, there's some lasers involved in your history and there's American Marine, which is 20 some odd years, but give our listeners your history and how you came to be where you are right now.
Yeah, we'll start with the boating industry part of it, which is my main focus. Basically second generation growing up in the marine industry, lucky enough to learn from a lot of other people growing up. My father, obviously, being one of them, my uncle Mike, just years and years of working at the dealerships, starting out like a lot of kids did who work for their fathers, doing absolutely the worst jobs at the marine store, at the marina. It was, I don't know if you guys have such things called mayflies out where you are, but they are a nuisance that comes around once, maybe twice a year. They're attracted to lights. So my main job for the month of May was to scoop, and I say scoop because I literally used a snow shovel, scoop up pounds and pounds of these things and put them into the garbage and throw them away. And they call them mayflies, June bugs, or they also call them fish flies. And the reason they call them fish flies, because when they die, they smell like a dead fish. So,
Have we gone this far already that we're talking bugs that smell like dead fish? I love this.
I was just trying to figure out in my head how that started, how we got from, you asked me about what I do for a living, and I start off with, let's talk about fish flies.
Well, I think there's something there. I mean, if that's how you consider how your career trajectory has gone, there's something to it.
You know, that's when I realized I wanted nothing to do with the marine industry. And honestly, that's the truth. You grow up, doing all the terrible jobs. And it was something I did all through high school. When I got done with high school, I knew I wanted to get into business. But the marine industry was probably last on my list of things I wanted to do there. And then got into college a little bit. And in the summers in college and every spring break I had, got to do some of the more, fun things of, working in the service department, service manager, parts manager, even accounting, things like that, and realized that there was a lot more to the marine industry than shoveling fish flies. So topped into it, obviously, and kind of grew from there. After college, moved down to North Carolina, worked for my father again there. We had opened up a store down there, and then actually spent 4 or 5 years working with Marine Max. Obviously a lot to learn there, a lot of great individuals to learn there, and then moved back to La Crosse in the early 2000s and started American Marine back up.
Like it. The line that stuck with me is got into college a little bit. Dancer got into college a little bit too, enough to get like a sociology degree with D minuses.
I spent a little bit more time than I should have in college. I spent 5.5 years to get a 4-year degree, and no, I didn't change my major all that much. But I think it was after my fourth year, I went to my advisor, and this is where I kind of realized maybe sales was something I should hop into. I said, all right, you're probably tired of me coming in here. I know I'm tired of coming in here. So what's the quickest way for me to get out of here? So we negotiated some of the things I wasn't good at, sciences and things, biologies and things that I wasn't great at, negotiated some easier classes for that, and came out with a business degree with an emphasis in tourism was the quickest way for me to get out and wrap it up.
Nice. Well, you and I share that in common. I also went to my counselor, a little different reason. My parents decided to pay for the first 2 years of school, and then they said, you're completely on your own after that. And after 4.5, and I started seeing those bills, I'm like, I got to get out of here. So I asked her the same question. I'm like, I just said, you pick it. I don't really care. You pick it. So there you go. I just want the diploma and hang on the wall.
That's right. That's right. It's, that all important coveted degree from the University of Wisconsin Stout, which I promise you two have never heard of before.
No, but I like stout beer, so I'm game. I'm in.
Yeah. Nothing to do with that, unfortunately.
don't just let me have that, would you please? Hey, Marine Max. You came from Marine Max. I think 98% of the people are in the marine industry because of Marine Max. I don't know what it is about them being the eternal training ground, but I do have a question for you about Marine Max. You were obviously doing some work for them. I believe you were a trainer of some sort, which is probably why you give us so much shit about training and moderating. But what's different about doing and consulting?
Well, there's an old saying, which you guys know, which I'm not going to bring up, but for me, it was a great experience because I was in charge of, or I work, excuse me, with, director of dealer development. And so therefore half the year I would spend time going out to the dealers that they just acquired and working with them, talking about, how the Marine Max way of doing things is going to go. And then the other half was people coming into, our training facility and working with us there. So every time, Sam, you're in a meeting and you see me shaking my head, that's just something you did wrong as a moderator. You're just lucky enough. I don't point those out to everybody every time because I found myself shaking my head a lot,
As you're scribbling notes, I'm thinking that's something he wishes he would have done when he was a trainer. It's funny how I interpret that a little bit.
Yeah. Everyone has their own way of interpreting things. So great experience. Awesome. Crazy amount of people coming through there. Obviously, I didn't work with Bill McGill directly much, but I did work for Brett McGill for a period of time. Obviously, he's moved up and done a great job with the company now, too. But just all the other dealers, you know, that we acquired, all their personnel that work there, so many great people and such a great learning experience just coming in. You know, some of the stuff is same thing that goes on in our group with you is, you know, we learn a lot during the meetings, but then also sometimes it's those dinners that we go to or just, you know, sitting around having a cocktail afterwards. The conversations that start there and the things you can pick up and learn from other people is just awesome.
Justin, I don't know if you and I talked about this. Forgive me if we did, but relative to the McGills, Bill McGill and my father were good friends. We grew up on the same lake together, and Brett McGill and I used to go water skiing on that lake together. Did we ever talk about that?
We did not. No, I did not know that.
Yeah, I knew Brett as a kid, and then, I don't know, somewhere around age 11 or 12, we lost touch, and I found him again, and we were both in our 40s, so that was kind of an interesting dynamic to walk into. But good people, for sure. What's the corporate line? Memories on the water, made on the water, or something along those lines?
Delivering the dream.
Yeah, it was something a little bit different, but they were always, Bill McGill in particular was always preaching that we sell something different. We also sell boats, but we sell the idea of what your life looked like on the water. And I can't coin the phrase, but
brings up having the water gene a lot. So all of us who love boating have the water gene.
Yep. I noticed you didn't answer my question though. Difference between consulting and doing. So I'm going to circle back and hold you to account on that one.
The difference between consulting and doing is consulting, as you guys know, you know, we know it all, and we just try to impress upon each person, you know, the knowledge that we have. It doesn't mean everything we say is golden, go do this and you're going to be successful. The difference is coming into, well, you know, I can take it two different ways. I can show you the difference or tell you the difference between the two, but also there's a lot of the same types of things. So if I go along that exact same route, you know, to coming into the dealership every day, there's not a blueprint for it. There's not a, if you do this, you're going to be successful. So I think consulting and doing can be different, but it also can be a lot of the same attributes.
Fair enough. I'll take that one.
I like it. All right, let's get into American Marine. Consists of five dealerships, I believe, at the moment, rooftops in the Wisconsin-Iowa area. You know, let's first go into, talk to us about, you know, where they are, and then I'd love for you to talk to me about the challenges you face because of so many rooftops, right? So it's, I've always said that, you know, owning a second dealership isn't twice as hard. It's exponentially harder when you do that. So, yeah, I mean, you're getting into the game of five, right? And then I would like to hear, what are the advantages of having five instead of one? So talk to us about the dealerships and then go into those two for me, if you would.
Sure thing. So obviously our headquarters here is La Crosse, Wisconsin. The only reason I say headquarters is just because this was the first one. Then we moved on to Dubuque, Iowa. We've got a great store, marina down there, campground, RV. And our third acquisition was in Lake Holcomb, Wisconsin, a fabulous resort town. It is very quiet in the wintertime, but just bustling with people. Everybody goes to their cabins. And the reason we actually went that route with a lake store versus our two other stores in Dubuque and La Crosse, our river stores, was because in 2019, the river flooded. So we had, I think, 3, maybe 4 weeks of actual boating season that summer. And kind of one of those things like, you know, hey, instead of expanding along the river, why don't we expand into some lake areas? Therefore, we don't have to, you know, worry about the river flooding every year. So that was our acquisition in 2019. And then most recently in 2022, Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, our first store that is not on the water. It is located on a nice busy highway, so we get a lot of exposure that way. And then this spring, we are opening up in northern Wisconsin in Hayward, to kind of a resort town, but also a lot of people live there. So it's kind of a little bit of both. So, and that is also off the water.
Yeah, that is cool. I like the breadth of it all. The question I have is how different are those, right? You got a highway store, you have river stores, you have resort stores, you have lake stores. Is there, hopefully there's a common thread that you can pull them all together with, but I'm guessing those are very different clientele coming in the door.
It is. You know, the common thread is that everybody just wants to be serviced and taken care of in the boating industry. You know, they want to purchase their boat, but the big thing that everyone wants is to be taken care of after that. So that is the same throughout. Otherwise, yes, the customers themselves, where they come from, you know, dealing with them, a lot of times they're not at their boat, they're not at their cabin during the week, but if there's something wrong, they want it fixed during the week so that when they come back on Thursday or Friday night, that their boat is ready to go.
Nice. So, okay, two decades doing this with, you know, one now at five, what are the challenges that you face or that stick out to you most about having so many rooftops?
The challenge, I think, is industry-wide is people that we kind of want to work in this industry. Technicians, obviously, not just in the marine industry, I know in the auto industry, and I assume power sports as well. You know, finding those individuals who want to make a career out of this industry has been a challenge and continues to be a challenge. As far as having five rooftops, there's nothing that's really different at each one as far as that, other than just finding that right people to work there. If you can find the right people to work there, man, makes my job so much easier. And I've been very lucky in the past, you know, two decades, but more recently in the past, let's say 5-7 years of just having an incredible staff. Everybody from the GMs on down to, you know, the gas dock kids who are, you know, friendly and greeting people. It's been awesome. But that is the key, you know, probably in most every business. It's probably pretty cliche, but for me, just finding those right people is really what, you know, can make a business work.
Yeah, I've always thought about that. You know, owners with multiple rooftops, you know, if you blow somebody out because they're not the greatest teammate for you, you know, they can't go to the other four. You know, you're not going to hire them at the other four. So your pool gets smaller every time you lose somebody. And I've always thought about that, whether it was the Marine Maxes or the One Waters or the Rumble Ons. It's like, if you blow somebody out, there's a good possibility they're gone for good. And so, yeah, that freaks me out a little bit.
Yeah, for us too. I think, you know, we're in small towns, right? We're not in the Minneapolis's or the Milwaukee areas. So for us to, one of two things, you know, find the right people and keep them, keep them happy and keep them working here. But then also, you know, that also translates to the customer. You know, we're in a small town, so I go out to dinner, I'm going to run into customers, and same thing with our staff. So we want to provide a good product so that every time we see them, you know, it's not a, I'm afraid to go out in public, I'm afraid to go out to dinner and take my wife and kids out. But also along those lines with the employees, certainly got to keep everybody happy as much as we can. And like you said, if we do have to move on from someone, you know, that does just decreases our pool even a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So staffing issues are the disadvantage. What are your advantages of having five rooftops?
I think the big advantage, especially for our employees, is the opportunity to grow. So you guys obviously have talked about culture quite a bit this year. That's been a big thing for you and a great thing to talk about and discuss. So I've got probably my number one story that I've talked about was back in 2002. I hired this gentleman by the name of Eric Maslivik as a yard guy. And his number one job every day was to pop into my office and figure out what I wanted for lunch. He would come in and sit down, and we'd talk about what was for lunch. Obviously, it was the old I would buy, he would fly, but that was his number one job every day to do that. So Eric stuck with the company and moved into the parts department. And, you know, he's a 22-year-old, 23-year-old kid learning about our industry, learns the parts department, does such a good job that when the service manager's on vacation or out of the office, he's able to cover for him. And when the service manager retires, he moves into that position. From there, he excels at that position. He does an awesome job as a service manager, moves up and is a GM. So fast forward to today, got a gentleman who started for me as a yard guy in 2002. Not only is he the general manager for our biggest store here in La Crosse, but he also oversees service parts and storage for all of our locations. And having grown from one dealership into two and now into five, we've had other people who've grown and had the opportunity to move up, not only inside that dealership, but outside. So for our newest dealership in Hayward, for example, we had a business manager who was with us for 5+ years, expressed an interest in moving up to Hayward. And within a couple of months, he was hired as the general manager to basically start that store from scratch. We also had two technicians who wanted the opportunity to challenge to start up a new store and moved up there, and they're ready to take on and build the American Marine name up in Hayward, Wisconsin. So having those multiple rooftops gives us opportunities to help those employees grow, you know, not only inside that store, but, you know, there's other opportunities at other locations.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's staffing and staffing. It's the disadvantage and the advantage. I like that. That's super cool that you can, and I think as an owner of any business, it's really great to see somebody come in because we all get tainted with the view of, man, I bring so many people in. I spend so much money training them. We give them everything that they need to succeed. And it just, it's not meant to be, right? We hear that all the time. But there are those great stories of you brought somebody in, they had no concept of what they were going to do in the future. And now, like you said, you know, that he's a general manager. You've had other people rise to the occasion to go open stores for you. So that's, I love those stories for sure.
And it sure is fun to watch them grow, right? I mean, it's so cool. It's just great. They can start with us, you know, maybe at a younger age or maybe, you know, even a little bit older. But when you find that right position for that person and you watch them just take off with it, and all of a sudden they're coming to you with ideas on how they think they can make that department grow, that to me is just absolutely awesome. It's just such a good feeling and it's so enjoyable, and it's just part of what the marine industry is and I love about it.
Well, yeah. And that's great. That circles back to your comment earlier that the biggest impediment to multiple rooftops and another rooftop are the people. And if you're homegrown, if you grow these people up, and I guess what I want everybody hearing out there who is a who's a yard person or delivery porter in the motorcycle industry or whatever it is, these stories are not rare. If you go to work with a mindset of put me in, coach, and how can I be of service, you find yourself quickly running up the ranks and a lot of them in general manager seats. So it's pretty cool that you're doing that, Justin. I did have a question for you. You talked about some of the advantages of multiple rooftops. Let's flip that around. Let me ask about mom and pop stores. Is there an advantage that a mom and pop store has over the multiple rooftops that are out there? And then I've got a follow-up for you relative to the corporate side of Marine Max and OneWater these days.
Yeah, so the mom and pop shops certainly do. You know, generally they're in a smaller town as well. They've most likely had clientele for 20, 30, 40 years. And those people just, you know, continually go back to that store and do so. So honestly, that's who I've partnered up with every time we've had an acquisition has been a mom and pop. And it's been, I say partnered up because, you know, we sitting down and talk about it. It's not a me coming in there and I explain, hey, we're in other locations, but we're all small dealerships. We've all been mom and pops. So what can we do to make this work? Or explain about how things work at American Marine, how we're very similar to, you know, we're a mom and pop shop with multiple locations, I guess is the easiest way to say it. And a lot of things that I try to explain to them and just talk about it that way. So, you know, mom and pop has an advantage of obviously inventory wise, right? Inventory personnel wise, you know, once you've got your staff and you've got your inventory, you know, you're pretty much set. You don't have to worry about, you know, we've got too much inventory here, we've got to move it around, or, you know, we've got a major shortage of personnel at this location. You know, how do we fix it? So definitely some advantages either way.
Well, and I think there's a flavor to a local mom and pop shop. So I love the fact that you're partnering up with them. So let me ask you, from a guy who came from Marine Max, and I did some work for them at one point. I do a lot of work with OneWater. And I think for the listener out there, I believe both of these organizations are north of 100 rooftops, which can feel very corporate at times. And so that's really my question relative. We're talking about staffing and culture. And so how do you... Or was it your feeling that working for such a big organization, you missed a lot of the culture that you used to get at mom and pop stores?
Yeah, Sam, I think that's a great way to phrase that is that, you know, the corporate world, again, as I mentioned, obviously earlier, I learned a ton from. And as I learned from my father, you know, sometimes you learn how to do things and sometimes you learn how not to do things. And yeah, I miss just going into the dealership every day and seeing the same people. And that's what we have here, obviously, with our five locations. I can drive down and I'm 2 hours away, 3 hours away now from Hayward. But other than that, I can hop in a car, stop in there, talk to everybody, see how things are going. In the corporate world, you know, that just doesn't happen. Yeah, I might get out to a dealership maybe once a year and just didn't have quite that same feel that I was used to.
Mm-hmm. Let's switch gears a little bit here. Let's talk about, you know, manufacturers and dealers. So in your experience, what makes a great OEM partner? And if you're willing to, do you have some favorites and why? And you don't have to answer the second part if you don't want to, but what makes a good OEM partner?
I think a good partner from an OEM standpoint is someone who truly has their dealer's best interest in mind. I think sitting down with them, talking to them and asking them, you know, what's going on here? What are you seeing? And that sounds pretty simple, right? And it can be. It really is a simple concept, but there are several manufacturers out there who don't. There might be some that I hear from when it's time to order boats. You know, it's time to place your commitment for the year. You know, what are you thinking this year? And what can we do to help you? But it's the ones who are really stopping out or really seeing trends and maybe giving you a call and saying, hey, I'm seeing this other areas of the Midwest. you know, maybe you should start thinking about reducing your inventory or increasing your inventory or maybe stocking this model. Or, hey, I'm going to give you interest free for a year on this boat if it doesn't sell, but I think this is going to be big. And just really partnering up with you in that sense. So it's a simple concept. You guys know that and I know it, but it really takes someone at the top of that OEM saying, hey, we have to have the best interest of our dealers in mind and make sure they know that and work with them.
So you want to step out at all and call out your favorites?
Yeah, I will. I will. I'm always wondering who's going to hear this podcast and how many phone calls I'll get after it airs. But the two that really stand out to me is the Smokercraft family, and we represent Sylvan and Starcraft here at our locations. But family owned, I can make a call into anybody at that manufacturer, and they'll pick up the phone. They'll talk to me if I do have any concerns. And the other one, most recently in the past 6 years, that you guys are very familiar with is Barletta. Again, same concept. Bill did a great job building that company. And even with the changes now in ownership and obviously him moving on, that same mentality has continued on. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah. When you're talking about makes a great OEM partner, you had mentioned the manufacturer sitting down with you and having conversations with you. And I've been on record before to say that the marine manufacturers did a better job as a whole than power sports at, hey, 2024 is coming. What do you think? What do you think about the inventory? What do you think you can take on? What's reasonable, as opposed to here you go, which we saw a lot in the power sports side of the fence. So relative to inventory, I have a question for you about MAP policy. Tony and I clearly have our opinions of MAP policy. We have a lot of inventory in the channel right now, and we're hearing grumblings that OEM should install more MAP policies out there. Are you feeling that? And do you have an opinion on MAP policy, Justin?
MAP policy to me does make sense. It is something where, you know, and they know a lot more of the metrics of, you know, if we just advertise MSRP, we're only, you know, hitting this many people versus if we have a 15% reduction off of that, we get in this more many people. And I'm not privy to those numbers, but for me, having a good number and maybe a conversation about MAP makes sense. Where should we have it and would we do it? I think at a certain point, if a boat becomes maybe it's a model year older or maybe two, and if unfortunately, if that ever happens, I think maybe you need to move on from that MAP and say, okay, now you can advertise whatever price you want to, because obviously the manufacturer and the dealer both benefit for that that boat getting sold and moving on to a customer. So, but I think having a strong MAP policy is a good idea. It's just got to be a conversation of where should it be. And the problem that the OEM runs into is it's probably totally different for that, what that MAP should be in California versus what it should be for La Crosse, Wisconsin. And so I just always voice my opinion on what I think it should be, but obviously for them, that's a bigger challenge.
Yeah, interesting. And again, for the listener out there who's not heard of MAP, it's minimum advertised pricing is what we're talking about. So the manufacturer allows for pricing to a certain level and then not below it. And in the store, you can charge whatever you want, right? You can mark that boat up or down or whatever happens to be. But just as a blanket statement, you're not allowed to advertise from your store at lower than X, whatever that number happens to be. And I guess my question would be, if you go back to, I appreciate your regional input there, that it's going to be different in California than in La Crosse, Wisconsin. But as a national 30,000 foot perspective, who wins and who loses? And this is a conversation Tony and I had just the other day. Like, if there's a minimum advertised pricing, what types of dealers win versus what types of dealers lose? And therefore, you can understand their feelings behind getting in support of it or not. What are your thoughts there?
Well, it depends on where that MAP is, right? I mean, where you're talking about percentage off of MSRP. And I think the dealer, you know, having that MAP policy, certainly I think every dealer wins if they're all following it. The dealership that doesn't follow it, if they're going below that MAP, certainly wins is going to be the guy who's all about price and tries to sell units. He's not a service company. He just wants to move as many units as possible. Those who follow the MAP policy and do it are obviously dealers like myself and so many other dealers that I work with. And we call ourselves service companies, right? We're a service company who happens to sell boats. And so for us, you know, having that MAP policy, you know, we have to make a certain profit in order to be able to take customers a certain way. And our customers expect that. And therefore, you know, we want to be able to do that. So I think it can be beneficial to both, but the way I lean more is more of the having a, you know, MAP policy, and that can be a, you know, maybe depending on where your MSRP is, but somewhere 15 to 20% off of that.
Yeah. Got it. Let's switch over and talk about managers. How do you, you know, you discussed those people that start out you know, in your parking lot or fetching lunch and now are running major swaths of your organization. How do you grow your managers to ultimately take ownership of those stores, even if it's only a mentality without actual ownership, right? So what are you doing other than just boots on the ground training to make sure that they're going to take ownership of that store?
That is a great question. As far as, you know, you kind of mentioned in there, you know, growing them, besides Eric, a lot of the general managers that I have, I've been able to find from other industries. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Harley before, but I've got a great general manager who came from that world and has helped us grow as a company. But, you know, really it's just the communication part of it. It's getting everybody together, and that can be over our, you know, bi-monthly GM call, you know, forcing them to really talk about what's going on at their dealership, forcing them to ask questions to the other GMs and be vulnerable a little bit of, hey, I'm having a trouble with this.
Yeah.
How can you guys help? And it's, again, just a discussion that kind of goes from there. And sometimes, you know, we might spend an hour talking about one thing that came up as far as a subject line or a problem. And for us, that's how it's really worked out well, is just that communication aspect of it. You know, I can't take a lot of the credit because these GMs know that the way I run my business is that, you know, they're a part of this business. They're an owner of this business. So make sure that anything that goes on, let's talk about it and let's bring it up and let's help each other grow. And one thing that we've recently installed, which you guys, I promise you haven't heard of, is, you know, sales accountability by transactions.
Whoa.
I know. It is a brand new concept. I came up with it all myself. obviously kidding there, but, Chris, our general manager down in Dubuque, is a Harley guy and has been pushing this, and his business in Dubuque has grown since the pandemic, which not every store can say. And it took me a little bit, obviously, but we've now hopped on board with that. But he is the lead. He is the champion in that. I don't try to take control of it and say, no, we're going to change it. We're going to do this. We're going to make it mine. It's his. And he's brought that to all of our stores now, and we're all running with it. So I think that communication and just taking ideas from everybody and seeing what works and trying it all our stores and just doing whatever we can to succeed together.
Tony, Chris started, before I really knew his background, I knew he worked at Harley at one point, but I didn't really understand his background. And then he starts preaching from the pulpit about transactional ratios and about how this particular dealer in the room was missing X amount of boats. I'm like, oh my God, thank you. So finally somebody in the boating industry who's living it, as opposed to the two of us telling them that they should be watching this. He's a great add to your team, Justin.
Thank you. Yeah. And I used to have a little tally mark that I would mark down on my piece of paper every time he said the word Harley or I worked at a Harley dealership or something. So I'm very proud of it, as well he should be, because that's where a lot of his experience came from. So I'm glad that we can take his knowledge and put it to use at our dealerships.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you got guys like Eric, you got guys like Chris. Obviously, you have some really good team members. What's next for you as your team continues to grow? Are you looking at more stores, or where do you go from here?
Yeah, I think so. That's the question, you know, that I get quite a bit is, you know, where's next? Where are you going to head to? And it's never, I have an area to go to, honestly, besides probably Hayward, which, you know, our partners at Barletta really wanted us to move into because we had, you know, pretty much the rest of our side of the state in Wisconsin. So the rest has always come organically. It's either someone reaching out to me saying, you know, hey, I'm getting up there in age, or I've been doing this for 20 plus years. I'm thinking about something different. Would you be interested in partnering up? And the answer is generally always yes. And we kind of start the conversation from there. But I think we'll continue to grow. You know, even if it's just within our own stores, we're going to continue to try and move the needle a little bit here and there wherever we can. But I think somewhere probably within, 2 hours of La Crosse, maybe 3 hours, you know, there'll probably be another opportunity for us, and we'll take a hard look at it.
So is that the magic? Is that the window? Like, you don't want to be in a car more than 2 hours. You don't want to something on another state, or, well, you got one in Iowa.
Yeah, we have one in Iowa, but again, it's 2 hours and 15 minutes from my door down to Dubuque, Iowa. So for me, it's always been kind of what I've looked at. I guess I've always looked within that 2-3 hour window. It's not a, you know, I would never consider something in a different state. You know, obviously we're bordering with Minnesota as well, so there's always opportunities there. You know, but I think, kind of sticking with the mentality that we have of being a small town dealership, I think that's where our specialty lies, and that's where we're probably going to continue to go. I'm not going to be hopping into a big city market. Of course, all my employees want me to get a southern dealership, and just so they can all move down there and work there in the winters. Right. But no plans for that in the future.
All right. Well, as advertised, let's talk. Let's talk cold plunge. Let's talk the whole, as you call it, tongue in cheek. How much of your life success can be attributed to cold plunging? And when did you start this? And how can people watch this? It's funny.
Well, I got to mention first that you guys are definitely the master marketers, because, you know, you do the intro and you get everybody all excited about this Instagram post about me plunging, and then you make them listen to me for the entire time first and then bring it up towards the end. So good job. Kudos to you guys. Yeah. Cold plunging. I got into it a couple of years ago. You know, my brother-in-law actually was starting into it. And one Thanksgiving he was in La Crosse to celebrate with us and staying at my house. And he's like, "Hey, do you want to hop down into the river and plunge?" And at that time, the river was open. It was, you know, probably in the 50s. And so I did, I went down and cold plunged with him and kind of picked it up from there. So yeah, the hole is actually a hole in the ice that I go down to my dock from my house and I take the chainsaw with, and I literally cut a hole in the ice and hop into it. And, you know, you can get to grow with it. You can do, you know, 30 seconds, then a minute and 3 minutes. And I think my record's, you know, 15, 16 minutes in 35, 36 degree water.
Ooh, damn.
But it, you know, the reason for the Instagram post on Sam was, you know, first off, Sam can take shit, and that's what I like about him, and it's good. But, you know, you got to have things to entertain yourself when you're in the hole, right? you know, you're sitting there and, you know, we got eagles around and stuff in the springtime, but sometimes you just need something to entertain yourself. And I was like, you know, I think I'm just going to do an imitation of Sam. He's always selling. I can see his background there. He's got the Garage Composites and other logos on there too. So it's fun to do. It's something that definitely is addicting once you start it. I don't do it every day, but I probably 4 or 5 days a week, I'm going down either to the hole or in the summer times, I now have a chiller tub set up in my basement so I can set whatever temperature I want to and go down there and do it. So it's kind of a high almost that you get from it. And I can tell you, if I'm on vacation or if I'm away from home somewhere warm for 5, 6, 7 days, I can tell you I miss it, and my body misses it, and my brain misses it. The mental aspect of it's awesome as well.
So let me, yeah, we got to cue this up. First off, without flooding your Instagram page, you want to go ahead and tell people where they can see this video? And the answer can be no, because there'll be a lot of people that go look at it.
Well, you know, I always fancy myself an influencer with my hundreds and hundreds of followers. So I'll be happy to send it out there. Please, you know, refrain from the laughter on my handle. I don't even know if it's called a handle anymore or not, but it is Sir Boats a Lot.
Yes! Sir Boats a Lot. And what is your wife's account?
She changed it a couple of years ago to Lady Boats a Little.
Yeah. So the video, you can watch it there. It's you'll pee your pants laughing. It's awesome. And then also, you know, just going through your Instagram feed, it's hilarious. Some of the t-shirts you have are priceless t-shirts. Do you wear that stuff out in public, or is that just watching the Packers on Sunday?
No, I do. Come on, man. If I'm watching the Packers, I got to have something green and gold on. So, no, I don't really know where the funny t-shirt thing started at a while ago. Well, actually, I do know what it was. So, you know, everyone, when you go on vacation or something like that and you pull up Facebook, everyone's got their vacation photos on and they post, you know, what, 50 or 60 of them. And I used to do the same thing. No one really wants to see your vacation photos, right? They're always at work or they're someplace, you know, maybe in the Midwest freezing their butt off and you're down, you know, enjoying the sunshine in Florida or Mexico somewhere. So just figured I could make fun of myself and wear a funny t-shirt and pretend to be like an influencer. And here's where I am today. And, you know, I'm wearing this really fashionable shirt that might be something that says, I used to be addicted to Phil Collins, but take a look at me now, something like that. So, yeah. You know, Instagram, I got off Facebook, too political for me overall, but stay on Instagram. And it's honestly just a fun account just to kind of make fun of myself and, you know, also Sam, obviously, too.
Yeah. I like the shirt that says blink if you want me.
That one. You know what? You'd be surprised how many people blink at me, too. It's crazy.
I know. Crazy, right?
Hey, let me,
that's awesome.
Let me circle. Yeah. So get some. We need a, you need a shop. You need to push a shop out there so we can all jump on there and grab some of these t-shirts. Let me take the cold plunging. Let me just circle back on that for a second and take that just a little bit further. We talk frequently about get comfortable being uncomfortable. And you had mentioned that your body craves it when you're not around. I don't know, about 13 minutes at 30, whatever degrees you said, but it, when your body starts to crave it, and everything we're seeing out there, and I think Joe Rogan probably put a lot of us onto it, the idea behind it, but even just a cold shower in there, how many dealers do you think could benefit from some version of getting exposed to cold water relative to the clarity during the day?
Yeah, I think, you know, really comes down to challenging yourself, and whether, you know, you do extreme heat or cold plunging. I've actually just added a sauna in my crawl space as well, so I can challenge myself there. And for some reason, way harder for me to sit in that heat versus hopping into the cold water. But, you know, mentally, there's obviously a lot of studies out there, a lot of smarter people than me can tell you what the benefits are from it. But I definitely feel I'm a lot sharper and a lot better if I can cold plunge first thing in the morning, or even, you know, maybe even at noon, you know, go home and eat lunch. And a lot of people have that maybe hour where they're really tired. I'll maybe go home, eat lunch, and then go cold plunge. And man, am I fired up and ready for the afternoon. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. That is great.
I would not recommend cold plunging right before you go to bed, though, because you are not going to be able to fall asleep.
Well, now hold on, because that is not what I. If you listen to Timothy Ferris in the four hour work week, he talks about if you do a cold plunge, you put your body in a state of hypothermia, which causes it to want to go to sleep. It shuts down your other organs because it's trying to warm itself back up during the night. So I don't know. Do I believe Timothy?
Yeah, all of the research these days, and only reason I know this is because I just got a cold plunge and put it into the house, is that your body needs to be in a state of wanting to cool down, not heat up, to go to sleep. So there's a huge factor of sleep these days, which is your body needs to be cooling down to effectively fall asleep well.
Well, Tony typically goes to sleep with a bottle of scotch, so I don't know that I value that opinion either.
That's warming me up. So yeah, either or. If cold plunging won't work, I will hit Macallan's. For sure.
Do you think a lot of these experts are going to start following and listening to you guys' podcast now? Because, you know, I think whatever we say is pretty much the gospel. So, you know, whatever we decide here on this podcast, as far as cold plunging goes, you know, let's just put that out there that it's the right thing to do.
Your statement implies that they're not already listening, Justin.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you're as popular as me, you know, with my hundreds and hundreds of followers. So I don't really know how many people listen to this podcast.
That's awesome. Well, hey, Justin, we really appreciate you coming on. This has been a really good interview. Can't thank you enough. Know that you're busy. You probably got to go get into a cold body of water right now, so we're keeping you from that. But hey, listen, in all honesty, great answers, really good, insightful interview. For Justin Pritaski and Sam Danso, I'm Tony Gonzalez. This has been GarageCast. Have a fantastic Tuesday.
Thanks, everyone.